scooches to promote the state's 30 million acres of public lands. The Montana Conservation Voters Education Fund, led by Kirsten Cook, is sponsoring the second annual Pups for Public Lands photo contest.
So with this contest, we're hoping to inspire Montanans to get outside with their dogs in a responsible way that respects our public lands.
Winners will be featured on a calendar and get a doggy prize pack. Professional photographer and contest judge Kim West says the best time for puppy portraits is the golden hour, early in the morning or just before dusk.
And that was Roz Brown reporting. A Montana Native voting group opposes a proposed ballot collection ban. The Army completes a project for the remains of 9 children. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez and National Native News.
Native vote advocates in Montana are pushing back against efforts to eliminate ballot collection on tribal lands. Many members of the state's 7 tribes live hours from the nearest polling place. Mark Moran reports.
The Montana Supreme Court has ruled 2 laws make it prohibitive for people living on reservations to reach a polling place or mail an absentee ballot before Election Day. The state is now asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review that ruling. Executive Director Ronnie Joe Horse says Western Native Voice collects ballots from tribal residents who face transportation and other hurdles that keep them from getting to a physical polling place, and adds that service was very important during the pandemic.
We had a novel virus going around. A lot of people were afraid to leave their houses because Native Americans had a really high mortality rate than any other group in America.
The bills ended Election Day voter registration and third-party ballot collection services in Montana, but the state's high court ruled them unconstitutional and stopped them from taking effect. I'm Mark Moran.
The Office of Army Cemeteries has completed its disinterment project over the past month of the remains of students who died at the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania. The Army released its findings on the remains of 9 children. They were returned to tribes in South Dakota, Montana, Oklahoma, and Wyoming.
And that's Antonia Gonzalez reporting. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 3rd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff, Ken Jones, Suzanne Potter, Catherine Carley, and Roz Brown. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In-Depth, up next.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertoff. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Iran retaliates in missile attack on Israel. The Quad provokes China. And more nuclear threats from Russia. First, Iran retaliates in missile attack on Israel. Iran ended debate among Middle East experts about whether or not it would retaliate for Israel's assassination of longtime Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah. On Tuesday, Iran sent nearly 200 missiles aimed at Israel's coastal cities. The U.S. assisted in Israel's air defense. U.S. naval destroyers joined Israeli air defense units firing interceptors to shoot down inbound missiles, said Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, at a news briefing. According to Israel, none of the missiles caused loss of life, and before long, Israelis were told the attack was over and they could safely leave shelters. Israel's military promised consequences for the attack, while Iran vowed to retaliate if threatened again. Iran's announcement seemed to suggest that there would be no further missile strikes unless Israel countered. Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, condemned the, quote, broadening of the Middle East conflict with escalation after escalation, and said we absolutely need a ceasefire. But neither Israel, Iran, or Hezbollah showed any interest in a ceasefire. The Quad provokes China. When China's leaders call out the U.S. for implementing a containment strategy, the Quad is one of their pieces of evidence. The Quad, officially the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue Group, consists of the U.S., Japan, India, and Australia. Strangely, when the group's leaders met last month, a U.S. official announced that China was not its focus. That proved embarrassing, since both Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the president himself said China was the focus. Biden was heard by reporters saying the U.S. sees China's recent behavior, he didn't say exactly what he was referring to, as a change in tactic, not a change in strategy. Biden added that, quote, China continues to behave aggressively, testing this all across the region, and it's true in the South China Sea, the East China Sea, South China, South Asia, and the Taiwan Strait, he said. It's true across the scope of our relationship, including on economic and technology issues. The next day, China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs held a press briefing at which a reporter asked for a reaction to the president's remarks. The ministry's spokesperson said, quote, the Quad is identified as the premier regional grouping that plays a leading role in the U.S.'s Indo-Pacific strategy. It is a tool the U.S. uses to contain China and perpetuate U.S. hegemony. The Indo-Pacific strategy attempts to patch up forces to exclude and contain China by peddling the China threat narrative, and Quad tries to muster military and security cooperation under the pretext of maritime issues. Same intention, same tactics. Though the U.S. claims that it does not target China, the first topic of the Quad summit was about China, and China was made an issue throughout the event. The U.S. is lying through its teeth, and even the U.S. media does not believe it. More nuclear threats from Russia. Vladimir Putin has issued new threats to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine. Speaking to his National Security Council September 25th, he said that the country's nuclear doctrine had been updated. The updated version of the document, said Putin, proposes that aggression against Russia by any non-nuclear weapon state, but with the participation or support of a nuclear weapon state, should be considered as a joint attack on the Russian Federation, unquote. Nuclear weapons would be used based, he said, on reliable information about a massive launch of aerospace attack means and their crossing of our state border, unquote. The same would apply to an attack on Belarus, he's added. Clearly, the statement was designed to deter a U.S. decision to allow Ukraine use of long-range weapons in attacks deep inside Russia. Meantime, Ukraine's President Zelensky has warned that Russia might attack Ukraine's nuclear power plants. In a speech to the UN General Assembly, Zelensky said, quote, recently I received yet another alarming report from our intelligence. Now Putin does seem to be planning attacks on our nuclear power plants and infrastructure, aiming to disconnect the plants from the power grid. Just imagine, please, your country with 80% of its energy system gone. What kind of life would that be? Zelensky said. If, God forbid, Russia causes a nuclear disaster at one of our nuclear power plants, radiation will not respect state borders, unquote. It is not certain, however, that a Russian attack on a nuclear power plant is in the works. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, interviewed on public television September 25th, seemed to discount any immediate threat, but said the inspectors are alert to the possibility. In other news, corporations against democracy. A report by the International Trade Union Confederation found that some of the world's largest companies, including Amazon, Tesla, Meta, ExxonMobil, Blackstone, Vanguard, and Glencore, use their resources to undermine democracy, chiefly by backing far-right political movements, funding and exacerbating the climate crisis, and violating trade union rights and human rights. The report provides details on these companies' targeting of unions, financial backing of right-wing groups and candidates, lobbying at international organizations, and tax evasion. Among them all, Amazon, the world's fifth largest employer, stands out for its numerous violations of workers' rights. Gaming war with China. Ongoing tensions between the U.S. and China have made war games a popular activity in the China-watching community. These are simulations of the various ways the U.S. and China could become involved in a shooting war. The location is typically the Taiwan Strait that separates Taiwan from mainland China. In recent games, the scenario has been a Chinese blockade of the Taiwan Strait or a Chinese attack on Taiwan's electrical systems. Participants in these games, all well-versed in war strategy, devise scenarios designed to test tactical maneuvering, comparative weapons systems, and decision-making processes on both sides. Of course, there are no Chinese players, only Americans who think they know the Chinese mindset. Maybe they do, and maybe they don't. At first glance, these war games might seem to be very informative devices for decision-makers, allowing insights into how the enemy acts and reacts in a crisis and what options the U.S. might have. But such exercises have dangerous implications. First, the game focuses only on violent conflict. It doesn't give conflict management and diplomatic alternatives to fighting an equal shot at resolving it. Second, the groups present worst-case situations in U.S.-China relations. You don't hear about gaming cooperative global warming prevention strategies or exercises for overcoming trade barriers. Third, publicizing the games skews public opinion, promoting anticipation of an eventual war with China and giving a boost to funding of the military budget. When, for example, an admiral says the Navy is planning for war with China by 2027, rest assured his supporters in Congress will use that prediction to push for another aircraft carrier in the Pacific. Or, as another example, when a war game finds the U.S. lagging in response to a hypothetical Chinese attack on Taiwan's communications and energy systems, the conclusion is the need for bolstering U.S. military space options. Those defense needs invariably push aside consideration of U.S. options for reducing tensions with China and thereby negating the need for more weapons. Turmoil in Bolivia. Bolivia is in the midst of another political crisis. The former president, Evo Morales, is leading a protest movement against his former ally, President Luis Arce. With the next election a year away, Arce is under fire over the country's economic problems. Morales has substantial support in the countryside, thanks to efforts to reduce poverty when he was president. But he is also remembered for having violated the Constitution in 2019 by running for and winning a third term and then being forced from office by mass protests. Arce has rejected calls for his resignation and has attacked Morales for seeking a coup. Last June, when Bolivia went through political turmoil, soldiers attempted a coup but were rounded up and their leaders jailed. Mexico's first female president is sworn in. Claudia Sheinbaum, a climatologist mentored by her predecessor, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, was sworn in as Mexico's, and for that matter, North America's, first female president. Sheinbaum will have to deal with judicial reforms engineered by López Obrador, government debt, and organized crime. She will also be tested by relations with the next U.S. administration over immigration and drug trafficking. The planet is on life support. A group of 60 earth science researchers have issued a report warning that thresholds of human and natural livability have been crossed in all but one category. The group examined so-called earth system boundaries in categories such as climate, freshwater systems, biodiversity, and soil nutrients, and found that except in the category of aerosols, all the boundaries had been crossed. Among the remedies the group urges to protect the planet's ecosystem are limiting groundwater extraction and setting hard limits on use of nitrogen and phosphorus fertilizers. Next, Austria votes for the far right. Austria's anti-immigration freedom party, the FPO, scored an unprecedented victory in parliamentary elections. The FPO win was the first national victory for the country's far right since World War II. The FPO did 13 points better than it did in 2019, whereas the center-left Social Democrats did 11 points worse. But an FPO chancellor isn't a given. Other parties have ruled out building the necessary coalition to form a government under the FPO's provocative far-right leader, Herbert Kickl. And Austria's president, Alexander van der Bellen, a former leader of the Greens, says he won't ask Kickl to try to form a government as is customary, citing the importance of the rule of law and minority rights. Still, what we see in Austria is what we see across much of Europe. As one neutral observer describes it, quote, "The trend is clearly that these far-right populist parties are getting stronger and the center ground is getting weaker. This is a kind of new patriotism against the old elites up there who did everything wrong and took away our freedom." Finally, two updates from France and from Japan. The new French government will be center-right, even though the left came in first in legislative elections. The country has been unable to advance a 2025 budget or move to address a ballooning budget deficit. Interestingly, the main cabinet ministers around Prime Minister Michel Barnier are either from Macron's party, which finished second in National Assembly elections in July, or from Barnier's party, which finished fourth. None are from the left New Popular Front, which finished first, or the far-right National Rally, which finished third. Needless to say, that has caused considerable upset on both the left and the right. And Japan has a new prime minister, Ishiba Shigeru, a former defense minister. In the Liberal Democratic Party's voting preliminary to national elections, Ishiba defeated Sanae Takaichi, who would have been Japan's first female prime minister, since the leader of the Liberal Democrats has almost always been elected prime minister. The main opposition in the national vote will be Noda Yoshihiko, a former prime minister and leader of the Constitutional Democratic Party. The next prime minister will have to deal with multiple economic issues, including inflation and an aging population, as well as Japan's close security ties with the United States to contain China. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening and take good care.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
We're living through a time of almost constant stress and anxiety, with school shootings, the ravages of climate change, religious and ethnic intolerance, and perhaps overshadowing all of that, the upcoming election here in the U.S., just a month away, which presents an existential threat to our American democracy. How can we stay somewhat calm and sane and work toward solutions rather than giving into fear and despair? We all need our own coping mechanisms, hopefully healthy and productive ones, which is the goal of an upcoming workshop centering in the storm, practical skills to avoid burnout in these challenging times. The in-person workshop takes place this Saturday, October 5th, from 11:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the New Renaissance Bookshop in Northwest Portland. To learn more, we're fortunate to have with us the workshop hosts, Brett Hill, founder of the Mindful Coach Association, and Dr. Sonia Olson, author and founder of Heartstorming Wellness. Brett and Sonia, thanks for joining us at KBOO.
Fantastic to be here, Ken. Thank you.
Well, Brett, let's talk about your background first. You and I met about 20 years ago when we worked together at Microsoft.
We've both gone
from high-tech careers to something completely different, something absurdly different in my case. Now, how and why did you make that change from computers to coaching mindfulness?
Well, I have always had half a foot in the mindfulness world while I was doing tech as well. So the whole time I was doing technology, I was studying somatic psychotherapy and meditation and mindfulness, because that's kind of really where my passion was. I call myself a technologist these days simply because I've had such a long history with it. You know, and I was a teacher. I love to teach. And so it turned out I had this kind of funky skill set that combined to be able to talk about technology in a way that people could connect with, and that served me well in technical worlds. And a lot of that came from my training in how to create connection, rapport, really listening. What's the client really saying here? You know, it's like, oh, isn't the tech here? They're worried about something else. And then, you know, dialing in the value to the client rather than, oh, look at the nice shiny blue bubble. It's blue. It used to be green. Now it's blue. Woot. And they're going like, hey, I don't care.
Yeah, I want to ask you about one of those techniques. It's interesting. It's something I'd never heard of. You study Hakomi, which is described as a mindfulness-based somatic psychology. I wonder if you could talk about that and what appealed to you about the practice. I know the somatic is an important part of this.
Oh, yeah. It changed my world. And what we're really talking about here is the ability to, well, I should say, respect for the fact that we are a whole organism. We're not just brains, we're not just bodies, we're not just feelings, we're a whole system of stuff. And so oftentimes, I think that maybe the fastest way to get into the subject of quote-unquote somatics is to think about it in terms of nonverbal communication. So that's like an easy way in. And so, for example, if someone's sitting there saying, yeah, I really, really like that, but they're shaking their head no, they're going, yeah, I really like that. Well, that's a clue that there's
right.
a disconnect between what they're saying and what they're thinking and feeling. And so in a somatic coach or a somatic therapist would notice that and maybe invite the client to explore their actual relationship to that without saying, well, you don't seem like you're really blue. You don't judge. You just go,
there's a gentle way of bringing that up.
You invite them to explore what you notice in terms of the somatics. And there's a whole lot more to this because I teach it, but it's so incredibly powerful.
Well, I want to get to Sonia's background. Now, Sonia, you've trained as a veterinarian, and you've been doing that professionally for over 25 years now, and that led you to founding Heartstorming Wellness. Can you tell us about your journey from veterinary medicine to mindfulness and Heartstorming Wellness?
And maybe it seems like a little bit less of a stretch, because I was already in the space of healing, right?
Oh, right.
Suffering and being an advocate for those that don't have a voice. Well, it turns out that that's actually applicable to humans too. So in the veterinary space, this is globally the case that we as a collective have some tendencies and personality traits, as well as our historical conditioning and training, that really lend us to have the approach towards challenges and emotional dysregulation. And that includes then the consequences of that, the physical issues, the emotional dysregulation and the mental health challenges to say, I've got it. I don't need help. I'm going to do this myself. It's very much a stoic attitude because we're well-informed, doctor, heal thyself. However, there's a lot to being human and to navigating those very challenging and very beautiful, fulfilling spaces of veterinary medicine that we could really use a lot of support from each other as well as from external resources.
Oh, I'm curious, in all your years caring for small animals, what have you learned that also applies to larger animals like us?
Oh, there's so much. I mean, there's so much wisdom in our bodies, and animals are closer to it. Humans, we somehow get stuck up here in our brains, don't we? And so that we have, as Brett is saying, we have a disassociation. We don't connect to what our body is saying. So there's ways in utilizing somatic sensing, utilizing mindfulness practices. It's an invitation to look inward and reflect without judgment, getting curious, what's going on here? So as I was going through the spaces of challenge as a veterinary practitioner, I found that those techniques were immensely beneficial to me. I added certifications and training to my own skill set and started bringing that to my community. And that's how Heartstorming Wellness came to be.
Now, my discussions with Brett before we got together today, he mentioned you're an expert in radical equanimity. How would you describe that term?
Oh, I love it. That's intelligent efficiency. Where you're being thoughtful about how am I investing my time and my energy? Am I investing it in spaces and places that I have little to no control? If so, notice. What you might be able to do instead is accept, let go, let be, and approach that space as that's not mine. What is mine is to control and really manage what's me, as well as how I can influence not manage, not control, but influence outcome. So that's the idea of this, is coming from a space of deep compassion and curiosity and kindness, and also recognizing there's a lot of stuff out there that we don't have to agree, we don't have to approve, we certainly don't have to condone. We can step back.
Which is the perfect transition to the workshop on Saturday. Brett, it's called Centering in the Storm. And mm-hmm. the storm that we're talking about here is pretty much our current reality.
Yes, indeed.
So how do we avoid getting drenched in the storm? Centering is kind of an eye of the hurricane reference, staying calm in the middle of all this chaos.
Yes, exactly so. It's in the world we have today, which is so chaotic and intense and harsh. You know, it's like we are, I think, at our core, really actually pretty sensitive beings. We're really, you know, our nervous systems picks up everything. It picks up everything. And you have a response to every single thing that you perceive, whether you are aware of your perception or not. Your body, your mind, your heart is responding to it.
And I would say probably this time we're more overwhelmed than any time in history, given the internet and social media. I mean, it's constant. there's no respite.
Well, right. I mean, for millions of years, human beings' nervous systems developed out in the wild, in the savanna. You know, there wasn't like binary, phone, you know, we're not flipping through messages. You might see a scary, you know, snake or a lion or something, but that was it in terms of like really scary stuff that might happen all day. But today it's like 1,000 messages a day are coming at us, and that has an impact on us that makes a difference to the quality of our lives. And so this workshop is about, who are you in this reality, and what are the very, very practical, immediately useful things that you can do to find a sense of center, to find a sense of balance in approaching equanimity, in the fact that this is just our fact. So in terms of acceptance, it's a fact that this is our lives today. Mm-hmm. And rather than resist it like crazy, who am I now in this new world?
Now, Sonia, the workshop runs most of the day, from 11:30 in the morning to 5:30 that afternoon. How is it structured, and what are some of the techniques you teach in that time?
So Brett and I are really just looking forward to creating a space that is invitational and healing, as well as fortifying as we go forward. Together, I think our skill sets and our knowledge balance and complement each other so beautifully and synergistically. So it's really about creating community. It's about creating a space of self-compassion and outward compassion, helping folks understand the wisdom that is already innately within them. So just pointing to it, giving it name, and then having them practice with it, and then talk about it. Our adult learning audience needs relevancy, they need context, they need actionable skills. So that's what Brett and I are wanting to bring to this audience. If they are seeking a space of knowledge gathering, skill building, we are going to be in a space of giving them at least a widening and deepening of their existing toolbox for them to go ahead and get out in the world, apply it, and get increasingly curious.
Yeah, one of those tools, and I read the description, the workshop description, you mentioned touchstone practices. Mm-hmm. What are touchstones and what are the benefits?
So that language is Brett's. And that
I should ask Brett.
I know, it's beautiful because it's literally, is like there, it's somatic, it's touching into, and I believe in inner wisdom as well, such as polyvagal wisdom, and I'm a real geek for neuroscience. So I'm looking for—
Polyvagal, I don't know the term. Okay,
yeah.
That's many nerves, is that?
Yes, so you have this incredible nervous system that goes through your entire body that speaks to your brain, to your face, to your throat, and your voice, to your heart, your lungs, and your gut. There's so much that it can do to help balance between your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous system. Techniques such as movement and breathing, humming, singing, massage, and temperature all are ways of accessing this polyvagal wisdom. So that's some of what we're going to be talking about. And Brett also has touchstones that he has found along the way useful for himself, as well as for those that he coaches.
Now, Brett, let me ask you the final question. How can listeners find out more about Saturday's workshop and register if they like, if they're like me going through this this storm, this chaos around us, this overwhelming sense of social media and doom and gloom?
It's intense. It's intense. And
we're not alone.
No, exactly, right? And that's why we need to get together to connect and realize, you know, hey, we're all in this together, and get some really practical skills that you can walk away with. And the way you can find out more about that is that the New Renaissance Bookstore website has a link there that you can go to. When you go to their events, you click them, and you'll see our, you know, Centered in the Storm event happening there, and you can click there and register.
Brett, Sonia, thanks so much for talking with us today about this very important topic, especially this time of year, just a month before the election.
Oh, that's one of the reasons we got together. We are using all of our skills and going, you know, we need to spread this around, because we all need to resource each other right now in a major way. So this is, thank you so much, Ken, for the time.
So timely. And yes, we need each other. So coming from a veterinarian who historically was like, I've got this, it's okay to not be okay, folks. Reach out to your community and lean on each other, and so that we can be collectively stronger.
We've been talking with Brett Hill and Dr. Sonia Olson, co-hosts of the upcoming workshop Centering in the Storm, Practical Skills to Avoid Burnout in These Challenging Times. The in-person workshop takes place this Saturday, October 5th, from 11:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the New Renaissance Bookshop, 1338 Northwest 23rd Avenue in Portland. You can find out more, including how to register, online at newrenbooks.com/events. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their